Okay, 5 o'clock. Welcome to the Ulster and Delaware Corridor Advisory Committee. I'm going to attempt to speak in the microphone at the correct distance from the microphone. If it's too close, it will sputter. If it's too far, you won't hear me. So if you don't hear me, raise your hand, and I'll try to move a little bit closer. Is that better? Okay. It's a very touchy microphone. The meeting starts at 5 o'clock. It'll end promptly at 6:30. Many of us have meetings afterwards we need to get to. So we're going to keep that time scheduled. Let's start with a roll call.
Chair Collins.
Here.
Legislator Kovac.
Here.
Legislator Litz is not here. Legislator McCullough is not here. Legislator Nolan.
Here.
Legislator Sperry.
Here.
Legislator Uchitel.
Here.
You have quorum.
Thank you very much. I'd like to start off first by giving a little bit of history and a little bit of an explanation, re-explanation of what our charter is, why we're here, what this committee is here for. So as people know the history, in 2015 there was a compromise between the county and CMRR. This compromise divided the Ulster and Delaware corridor into four sections. Going from east to west, section one was designated as rail and trail. This is the section currently used by CMRR. Section 2 was undesignated. The legislature threw their hands up in the air and said, we don't know what to do with this. So they left it to us to deal with. Section 3 is in the Phoenicia area. The current occupant or current company using that is Rail Explorers. They want to contract that section of the rail. Section 4 is a tiny section between Bel Air and Delaware County, which is currently not used, I believe.
Let's section 4 is west from Phoenicia 2.
Thank you
very
much.
Up there. The section you're describing is the only one that's actively being developed.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
There's also the Midtown Linear Park from Cornell Street to Kingston Plaza.
Thank you for that. Thank you. So it's all of it now, 5 sections or 6, whatever it is. But in any case, the point of that is that the only thing that we're talking about is a section, the undesignated corridor. We have no responsibility, no charter, no ability to affect any other portion of the corridor. We cannot do anything with or do anything about or do anything for the CMRR contract. That's a contract between CMRR and the county. There's been press reporting saying that there's a problem, that there's an attempt to eliminate CMRR. That does not come from this legislature. Does not come from this meeting. Okay, we have no purview, no say on that. So I just want to make that clear. We are talking only about the 1.68 miles of the undesignated corridor. That's the entire role of this committee. Hope that's clear. Okay, we'll do public comment at the end. We'll not do public comment during the conversation. This is a conversation between the legislators and the committee. So during the presentations, I'm going to limit comments and questions to the legislature. I'm going to give preference to the members of the committee over members that are not members of the legislature that are not on the committee. Questions, legislators. Okay, so we're going to start off with a discussion led by Carl Beard on the definition of a trail. The purpose of this is to make sure that we all have the same understanding of what we mean when we say a trail. Because without that understanding, we don't know exactly what we're thinking here. So is that all clear? Thank you. Mr. Beard, go ahead.
Great. Is this my mic on? Or
no, you
press the button. Press the button and that's on.
There you go.
Okay, I'm going to have the same challenge with being the right distance from the mic here. So if I go dark, you need to wave at me and I'll try and move the mic or speak up. Thank you, Chairman Collins, and to the committee for inviting this discussion. I'm Carl Beard. I'm a current member of the Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee, and for 32 some odd years before that, I was the New York Projects Director for the Rivers, Trails, and Conservation Assistance Program of the National Park Service, providing help to communities, agencies, whatever, helping them figure out how to make gnarly trail problems happen and get resolved. So that's a little bit about my background. So yeah, what we're talking about in this case, mm-hmm. in the UND corridor, are shared use paths, and that's a particular term. It's a term of art in the trails world, but these are some of the other things that you may terms that you may hear being thrown around: greenway trail, multi-use trail, class one bike path, bikeway, rail trail, linear park, or just trail. In what we're talking about, what we're meaning, we're talking about specifically is a shared use path. I'll explain that a little bit. A shared use path is really accommodates, a lot of my presentation's been cut out, so I'm skipping around here. It's designed to accommodate different uses. It's design and use. And in particular, it's designed for bicycles and pedestrians. And the use case that we designed for is for a bicyclist to pass another trail user going the same direction while at the same time being passed in the opposite direction by a bicyclist. That's the use case that happens frequently on rail trails. That's the kind of width and trail use that we're trying to accommodate. So a shared use path is separated from roadways and vehicle traffic. It has a generally flat graded surface or an improved treadway, think pavement, and its intended use is for transportation and for recreation. There's usually a mix of those. Some serve a greater transportation use, others serve a greater recreational use. The Midtown Linear Park, for example, is used mostly for transportation, people walking to the shopping center and to home. The Shokane Rail Trail, Walkway of the Hudson, those are primarily recreational trails. Both fall into this category. So that definition, shared use path comes to us from the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, what we call ASHTO. Now, the ASHTO sets out guidelines for the design and construction of these shared use paths. That's their term. And ASHTO guidelines are required if you want to use any state or federal highway funding for your trail project, such as transportation alternatives funding. That is the design standard. What's in those standards? The ASHTO standards call for a 10-foot minimum width of trail with 12 to 14 feet in higher use or urban situations. And I used to say, well, every time we built a trail to 10 feet wide, we wish we built it 12. Every time we built it 12, we wish we built it 14. Now, the Ashokan Rail Trail is, for the most part, 12 to 14 feet. It does pinch down to 10 in some places. But that's, most of the other trails in the county are 10 foot. I think the Hudson Valley Rail Trail is in the 12 to 14 range as well. So, in addition to that 10 foot treadway width, you're required to have 2 foot shoulders, 3 feet preferred. And that's a kind of recovery zone for cyclists, a place where a kid on a bicycle might run off the trail, or someone might have to stop and get off the trail, the travel way, to be out of the way. It's a safety feature. And the design speed for shared use paths is 50 miles per hour on unpaved trails, or 20 or so for paved trails. Now, another set of standards that also apply is also turned for around ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, and that has very particular requirements for trails that refer to the surface. The surface must be firm and stable, in their terms. It also must be slip resistant. We have a maximum sustained grade of 5% or less. That's the grade in the direction of travel. A maximum of 2% across the slope, and their design use in ADA is wheelchairs, so they require a minimum 36 inches passage for one direction or 60 inches in two directions. But if you're adhering to the ASHTO standards, the ASHTO standards meet or exceed the ADA standards for trails. So we ASHTO is what we look for. And it happens that railroad corridors meet those basic standards of width, running grade, cross slope generally. Did I skip?
Yeah.
Wrong direction. There we go. So what do the standards look like? This is kind of the best case scenario. This is a very simple situation, cross slope. But you can see that 10-foot treadway in the middle, the 2-foot shoulders minimum on each side. Also, the 2 feet refers to any obstructions, signs, and things like that that can't be within 2 feet of the outside of the trail. Any rock ledge, things like that. That's your clearance distance side to side. You can see that this has a 2% cross slope. It has a gradual running slope with nice gradual turning radius here. So that's what it looks like. Now, it's important to think about differences in the types of rail-to-trails. What I just showed you is a straight rail-to-trail conversion. That's a case where you convert one single-track train to a trail. That's the most common type. There's about 2,400 of them nationwide. And that's mostly what we see around Ulster County. You know, the Walk Hill Valley, O&W, the Ashokan Rail Trail, things like that. Second case is rail width trail. And that's where in the Rail to Trails Conservancy considers the trail runs alongside a railroad. And they don't really distinguish in their publications between this and the next case. But generally, rails with trails were two-track railroads where one of the tracks is removed and converted to a trail. A subset of rail with trails, where there's trail running alongside a railroad, is what I call rail plus trail, where there's originally only a single track, and then the trail is added on in some way. So you don't have that basic railroad infrastructure working to your benefit. So again, underlining that, rail width trails generally, one track is converted to trail and one preserved as rail. The costs are generally comparable to a rail width trail. There are no specific standards for that rail width trail design, setbacks, things like that. Instead, what we do have is studies of cases from around the country. The best one really is this rails with trails, the best practices and lessons learned. But the ASHTO and ADA standards still apply to your trail. One of the important considerations in rail with trail or rail plus trail is the setback, the distance between the center line of the railroad to the edge of the trail. And what's recommended as well, that practice is 10-foot minimum from that center line to the edge of the trail, with 15 feet or more clearly preferred. Now, much of that width can be provided by a double track corridor, and in many cases, especially where that at the lower end of that thumb, fencing or barrier may be required. So, let's look at that setback. It's the conditions for the setback are evaluated by the type of train, whether it's freight, passenger, trolley, whatever, the speed of that train, and the frequency of travel along, likelihood of encounters between trail users and trains. Also, the method of separation between the railroad and the train, things like physical constraints, the topography, the construction of the railroad corridor. We also need to think about ongoing maintenance needs of the railroad to make sure that that's easily accommodated, and things like sightline distances, and any record of past problems of any kind in the corridor that may affect your decision for that need for a setback. So some 87% of rails with trails include some physical separation between the railroad and the train. That can be fencing, ditches, berms, vegetation, you know, drainage ditches, things like that. And again, those if there's fencing, that's usually considered in concert with things like the setback distance and those other criteria. The driving factor, the overriding consideration in all cases is safety. And attached to thinking about safety is liability for anything that might happen. So you need to be very careful with your design. There are examples of rail with trail in New York State. Here are a couple of them. The top one, the town of Boston, up in Saratoga County, about 3.5 miles of their trail is right along the Amtrak main line. And in this picture, you can see there's a 10-foot wide treadway, nice, healthy shoulder on either side, well in excess of that 2-foot minimum. There's a berm on the left-hand side that you might be able to see. There's vegetation, brush on that berm. There's also a utility power line corridor. On the other side of that berm is the Amtrak line, high-speed line. When you're on that trail, you would not know at all because of the degree of separation and setback there. You would not know that there's a train going there unless you hear it go rushing by. So adequate, more than adequate separation there. Second case, Orange Heritage Trail down in the town of Chester. About a quarter-mile section of their trail runs along an almost unused section of railroad. You can see the tracks there on the right-hand side of that middle picture. A more recent example is a section of the Empire State Trail, the Maybrook Trailway, for about 25 miles. That runs from Brewster to Hopewell Junction. That runs right alongside a railroad. Again, a double-tracked railroad, and you can see in that bottom picture that there is some the kinds of separation and setback in an extremely constrained, very short area of bridge. You're not going to expand the width of a steel bridge like that, so that's what they had to deal with. And again, previously double track, one track converted to a trail. So, what we really see in the undesignated section is the need for a rail plus trail. And because what we've got is a single track railroad. That's a narrow width of treadway, rail corridor, that's situated either atop a high fill in a couple places and in deep rock cuts, and single bridges, single width bridges. So the existing infrastructure is really inadequate to fully accommodate a rail width trail conversion. Instead, we're talking about rail plus trail. It requires entirely new engineering construction. And that trail, again, needs to be built to the ASHTO AEA standard. And we have issues of figuring out what to do about drainage, wetlands compliance if we disturb the nearby wetlands, and the associated environmental impact of that. So, here's a little clearer look. I know you're going to be tired of all these cross-sectional drawings, but this is that top case is the ideal case of normal cutter fill creating a rail width trail. This is actually two cases. On the right-hand side, you can see the fill is added to the existing prism there, and still retains a usable slope on the outslope of the trailway. On the left-hand side of the top drawing, there's been cut into the uphill side of the railroad, and so you can find some way of accommodating a trail with the adequate 10-foot setbacks and still be able to do it generally within the corridor. Second case, extreme fill. And this is what we see in the high fill area, where the existing prism is already very steep. You probably can't just add fill on the outside. You need to add some sort of retaining wall or piling, something like that, or take create a whole new structure to accommodate that trail. Third case, the bottom, rock cut or ledge cut, where there's just a narrow clearance in between the rock walls, where some ledge removal would be needed, again, to maintain that minimum of 10-foot setback and you know, any drainage that needs to be accommodated in the corridor there. So, you know, again, here are the key differences. You know, in a rail-to-trail, simple rail-to-trail, you have a relatively economical conversion. The corridor meets basic standards required by HASHTO and ADA, and that's the characteristic of most shared-use paths. Rail with trail, in general, they start from double-tracked railroads where you have additional elbow room in the corridor to play with, and one track is converted. And then the third case, which is really what applies to the undesignated section, rail plus trail, where there really isn't any economical conversion. You're required to do some new trail construction if there's going to be a trail. And that's really kind of what CMRR is proposing here. So what we're really talking about with rail plus trail is two projects with the costs combined. One is the trail needs to be built from scratch. The treadway itself, that's subbase, base, surfacing, drainage. Also that big stuff, the rock cuts, fill, retaining walls, bridges, things like that. Those are the high ticket items. And then we have this issue of wetlands regulation because the high fill areas are, you know, inside the New York State regulated wetlands. So in order to create a trail, we're probably going to need some sort of new land acquisition or conversion, basically the creation of the expense of a new road through that to meet those HASHTO and ADA standards. In theory, you could divert to the nearby roadway, but there again, you're going to have to face those same issues of subbase-based surfacing, you know, wetlands regulations, because the parallel road 28A crosses the same wetlands. Going to address the same issues. So that's where we're at. I should say, if you want to take a deeper dive into this, there are excellent publications about it. These are some of them. They're in your packet. I think that's all I have for today. Oh, and this is just, if you want to learn more about the benefits of trails, that's something I was not invited to talk about today. I refer you to the 2020 State of the Trails report put out by the Australian Trails Advisory Committee. So thank you again.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the questions from the committee. Legislator Nolan.
Just one thing on the slide with the with trail and the three examples you gave, the Maybrook line, which shows the closest approximation of the trail with the tracks. The second track there is an inactive rail line, as I understand it.
It is, yeah. It's you know, maybe one train a year. So that's one thing that cuts you the slack to have that narrow, that shorter setback.
Do you know how many of all of, I think you said on that slide that there were, or the preceding slide that there were maybe 40 examples or something, how many of them have active trains on the with the rail with trail?
You mean nationwide?
Oh, I thought that was your New York slide. Was it 40 nationwide?
No, it's 400 nationwide.
400 nationwide.
Yeah.
Do you know how many there are in New York and whether...
The database for New York is a little squirrely. I don't trust some of the stuff. It's self-reported and... you know, some of the things, I think there's one that has maybe 100 yards that's close to a trail. And so, you know, is that a rail with trail? Not really.
So it's not easy to pull out.
Yeah, you can look at the database and you know, look at it just the way that I would, but it's self-reported, and I think there's some irregularity in the information there.
Thank you.
Legislators, you should tell.
So we saw a presentation a few weeks ago, or whenever that was, from the Casper Mountain Railroad about the options for the running the trail, the train running adjacent. Can you just speak to, like, first of all, did you see that?
I did, yeah.
Can you speak to what your reaction was to that in terms of the ASHTO standards and how that would fit? Like, is that, would that be just a complete deviation from the safety standards?
The case examples that Mr. Hunt presented were some of the ones, let me see, from Pennsylvania. Four of those were previously double-tracked. So they're lovely rail trails, very photogenic rail trails, high-functioning rail trails, but they're not representative of what we see in the undesignated section.
So what we saw, so in terms of the renderings for like what it, or in terms of what was described for if they were to run adjacent to each other, right, is that...
Those trails would need to meet ASHTO standards.
So can you, would it be possible to do that?
With the corridor in the undesignated section, it would be possible if you substantially widened the corridor. And those are the constraints that I'm referring to, either somehow expanding the high fill area, making wider rock cuts, things like that. I think as Legislator Liz has pointed out, anything is possible with enough funding. So in theory, yes, it could be done. But that's the trade-off that you're being asked to examine.
Did you view their presentation as abandoning the ASHTO standards, or did you see those standards?
No, I just let me see. The case examples of existing rails with trails would mean, I presume.
No, we're talking about in our case, like. The
proposal they made to simply construct a trail and things.
Would that be abandoning the ASHTO standards?
I didn't hear those ASHTO standards addressed in anything that they presented. Okay. I would need to. It's an interesting sounding idea. I would want to see their engineering drawings that demonstrate that they meet all of those standards.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Just a follow on that. Presentation that we have from Open Space Institute with GPI.
Right.
And your understanding is they did completely comply with ASHTO standards in their design.
Right. I think a part of Mr. Karras's presentation did directly address that. There was a lot of information in that. It was probably easy to miss. But yes, that is the design standard they were using in examining that corridor. They would have to. That's their engineering firm. That's what they do.
So why do you say they would have to?
Well, because if you're talking about a shared use trail, that's the standard that you would use, the ASHTO standard. So that is what they would be considering.
Any other questions from the committee members? Any questions from the non-committee members? Legislator Stewart.
And just to clarify, the ASHTO standards, we were told, either exceed... We can meet or exceed the ADA standards. And these ASHTO standards, that includes both, that takes into consideration both walking pedestrians as well as bicyclists.
Correct. Well, yes. For a shared use path.
Right. And in the previous presentations, their estimates, the CMMR's estimates, did not come up to those standard levels. Would that preclude bikes from using that trail if those ASHTO standards are not met? And by bikes, I mean bicycles, not motorized vehicles.
I would not be the one proposing a substandard trail connection. You would want to adhere to the ASHTO standards that are vetted for safety, utility, things like that. So I just did not hear the ASHTO standards addressed or incorporated into what was proposed.
Okay, thank you for that.
Anyone else? So I have a question for the legislators. Is it everyone's belief that we should abide by the ASHTO standards when we talk about a trail. That's the question that I'd like to make sure that we talk about, discuss, either find consensus or find not consensus. Legislator Litz.
I don't think you'd find anybody who would design it to anything other than ASHTO standards. There's professional liability at stake to provide something that's unsafe. So, I mean, it's a moot point. I don't know of any engineering firm that would want to put their livelihood on the line to design something that does not meet safety standards. It's kind of ridiculous.
That was my thought. It's good to hear that from you, Mr. Litz, if you have a lot more experience in this than I do.
Yeah,
Legislator, you should talk first.
I was going to say something, but that was still much more informative and eloquent and left no gray area, so I'm only unmuting myself to say I completely agree.
Legislator Mullen.
Yeah, I agree, and I appreciate Legislator Litz, who is a professional engineer, stating that. I think it's also the case that Ulster County is the owner of this corridor, or has the ability to become the owner of this section of the corridor, and any portion of it that Ulster County is working on, I think the county would have to be well served to meet the highest safety standards as well, in addition to the engineering and the professional standards. So this would be using public monies and making a publicly owned asset available to the public. So designing to standards that have safety flaws would be a real problem for me as a legislator, even without the engineering expertise.
Anyone else on the committee? Legislator Stewart.
I was just going to point out that if the county were to take control of this and put in a pathway a trail that would be not up to the standards, I'm afraid that we'd be holding ourselves up to considerable liability issues as well. So, just something to consider.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions on this particular topic for today? Thank you very much, Mr. Beard. Appreciate the presentation.
Thank you.
We will get the next piece going. We have to get a Zoom going, so it's a little technical.
William Sheldon is already on.
Yeah. His PowerPoint's on.
Now we have to get his PowerPoint up. I do want to preface this. Professor Sheldon gave us a very large document. I'm hoping that the committee's had a chance to read it. The document has five sections in it. We will only discuss sections 1 through 3, because sections 4 and 5 are not relevant to this committee's purview. Go. Professor Sheldon, go ahead.
You're muted.
We think you're muted. You're muted.
Okay, now can everyone hear me?
Yes, can you check the volume?
Yes, I'm okay, good.
Can you turn the volume up a little bit?
You have my document, which is comprehensive, and my intention actually for the presentation would be more to give you a chance. I said you could go through that document at leisure with a highlighter, and then we could have a discussion. So that is more the flavor of what I would like to do today, and I can show you just 4 or 5 quick slides to kind of set that up. Chairman Collins talked about three sections. The first one is railroad trail, and I think that's been very well covered by my colleague Howard Baird. So I'm going to talk about the next two sections. One is economic impact, and the second one is resident use. So next slide is number two, just a little bit about me.
Working on it.
Okay, good. Okay, so you can see my background here. MBA in International Management, PhD in Semiology, Educational Administration, College and Studies. I've been an economic analyst. I teach economics at, taught economics at the SUNY Institute. I've also been a management consultant. So in my background, you can see these are disciplines that require and even demand good critical thinking based on market evidence and expertise. I consider myself in this aspect not just a trail advocate, or not even a trail advocate, but I want to be a good thinking advocate. And so I want to, I submitted that to you to try and be a counterweight to some of what maybe is not based on always logic, evidence, and expertise. I also must consider myself a public benefit advocate. So it's not like I'm trying to wait, I'm trying to take a look at what is the best possible public benefit. And my slides today will cover that. I think if I could ask Michael to go to, let's do economic impact first, that would be slide 13. That's 10 in front of me. 13?
We're working on it.
Okay. Good. So when we talk about economic impact, how do we even measure this? There's some hard data that we can do, and the CMRR has writer numbers. The sugar rail trail, which we're talking about as one asset, has trail count numbers. How do we then turn that into economic impact? And I'll refer you down to this little footnote about the Camoin Group. The Camoin Group is an economic research firm, very highly respected, known for very conservative estimates. The walkway over that Hudson, they thought they projected 245,000 users, so there's more than 500,000. So that's an example. So they are well respected, and they have methodologies. And I would say Mr. Hunt, when he gave his presentation of the economic impact, he actually used their methodology. What they did was they went out on the Shinkan rail trail and they did a survey and they talked to people. They found out that their findings were 50% were residents, 50% were visitors of two different kinds. Some came specifically for that, and their spending was much higher, and I'll show this in a following slide. And the other one, guest spending is visitors who come for other things, but they happen to be there. The third group is residents who come, and they also like spending. This all told to be 70.4 million is what their estimate was. Mr. Hunt, now you'll see this on the left-hand column. His estimate for using the same methodology for the 60,000 group was 8 million. They also did a projection. What happens if you extend it into Kingston? And so then it jumped up from, I think it was 175,000 in 2020, which was the height of the COVID. They projected that would move it up to 250,000 users and a economic impact of 24 million versus the projection that Mr. Hunt presented in his studies of 10 million. So in both cases, current and projected, you can see there is a very powerful impact for a trail system. So you can show me the next slide. Backup one. This is from the Erie Canal Trail study. This is a very comprehensive one of our colleagues up in the north. And what this progresses is a per trip spending. And notice what happens. When you just come for a day, it's $26. You get some Gatorade, you go to a restaurant. The fourth column over there, the 531, those are people from a contiguous county, from around. Those people come in for a few days. But the big impact are people who come in from far away. So they are spending $1,000 to them. That's because if they come from far away, they're going to spend some time here on the trail for supplies, for restaurants, for lodging. And when they did this presentation, what they said was 81% of our $55 million contribution from the trail comes from this group. So the key here is extended stay. I had a conversation with Lisa Berger, and she said that's our mantra in Ulster County. Extended stays, extended stays, extended stays, and for good reason. And she also gave you the data that the Empire State Trail is very high, page number one. It's because people come up, and that is, by definition, an extended stay. So, if I take a look at the next one, this is Kingston. Kingston has this wonderful opportunity because it is the hub of all of the different trails. So you can imagine someone coming to Kingston with a family and staying for a day and going down to the walkway. Impulse one day and then the walk, maybe 2 days down there, doing the O&W, going down to the roundup and exploring that whole thing, and with a connection to the children. I give an anecdotal tale. There were 300 people who were using the group. They came up from the walkway and had a day off. And what did they want to do? These bicycles. They didn't want to rest. No, they wanted to go to the Ashokan. They didn't have a way to get out there. But this is an example of what tying the Ashokan into this trail system can do for us. So those are a few of the economic impact, and you can see in my report more detail on that. And also each of these slides has page numbers that you can refer to in there. So that's economic impact. The other section that Chairman Collins asked me to talk about was residences. So let's back up to slide number 9. This is the comparison of the corridor utilization. And I'm not sure on these. I think these figures for the railroad that may be a bit bigger. But there's still a ratio. The corridor is empty a great deal of the time. So if you go out there today, it's empty. Tomorrow, empty. This month, empty. Next month, empty. Thursday, Friday, Wednesday, Thursday, all of July, empty. It's an underutilized resource. Versus the trail. You go out any day on the Ashokan Rail Trail, it's busted. So there is what I call in my document an opportunity cost. The opportunity cost for a private enterprise to monopolize the corridor is all the possible uses that we have by residents. Now let's take a look at how many residents actually use a trail, that's 50 Ashokan, versus how many people ride the train in. And that's my next slide. The trail currently. So if we go back and we take 145,000, and this is count, we have track counts for that, 145 uses for the Ashokan Rail Trail. And we say half of those, this is a combined study, was a survey, half of those are residents, we get 71,000. If we take their 250,000 projection and cut that in half the residents, 125,000. Less than 7,000 people ride the trains. So how many people do you know that ride the trains? How many people do you know that ride it more than once? So this idea And the trim people will say, well, that's not 125,000 listens. And that's exactly right, but that's the point. People love the trim. So they use it over and over and over again. And it has significant health benefits. It has significant mental and health, physical health benefits. And that I want to make that quite clear. I could do one more slide here, maybe the next one. Let's back up one. Because there's a slide on one more. There's comparison of health benefits. You can actually quantify that number. There have been studies that do it. But, and you see 49% more likely to walk at least 30 minutes 5 times a day. That's what the medical people say. This contributes to your health. And if it contributes to your health, that means there are fewer people in our hospitals and our public clinics, and we save money from that. The Sloan report actually to the peak quantified it as $800,000 a year. So we can play around with that number. But I think it's very important to understand the trade of the and write it on a current trade for passively for a half an hour or 60 minutes or 90 minutes as a position. That's pretty much my my presentation to you on economic impact and on prison benefits for the trend. So I throw it back to Chairman Collins for question and answer and discussion, which is what I hope we can do at any rate.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to have open discussion for committee members on visitor use, meaning economic impact, and resident use, meaning local impact. Any questions? I'm going to do a legislator Nolan's hand first, and then legislator Leach.
So, thank you very much. When you talked about Des Moines doing the on-trail surveys and then using those surveys to come up with their figures for...
Legislator Nolan, can you use your microphone?
Sorry, I'm looking at the screen. You talked about Des Moines using on-trail surveys to develop their figures for how many of the people that were using the trail were local or nearby or from some longer distance. And then you noted that the CMRR had used those same figures for their calculations. Is that reasonable for them to do, or should there be an independent survey of train users to see if those proportions end up being the same for train users as for the surveyed trail users?
No, I think their numbers are being accurate, and I don't think we're playing around with a lot of difference. I mean, the methodology would say, well, what's the assumption? When you talk about economic studies, you talk about what's the assumption. So if he's saying that within this geographic area, probably people would stay overnight, and then you make a projection on that. And with this wider area, maybe people would come and stay a couple of nights, or people will just come and then leave. So this, I'm not sure of the degree of his assumptions, or of Des Moines for that matter, but what they will do is to take that kind of an assumption about what people's actions will be based on how far away they are, just like the area now did, and say, okay, let's multiply this by this. If it's $184, if you're from farther away, then we kind of do the math and we put that together. So I am not questioning the CMRR's numbers. I think I would accept that. But I'd also accept the Des Moines studies, and you can see that their numbers significantly more than twice outweigh that economic impact for the train.
Follow-up question, Mayor Miller.
Yes, thank you. So thank you for mentioning the Erie Canal Way data, and your chart on that is what prompted me to think about this, because that chart shows Steamtown, which is a rail attraction, as I understand it, and it's just a little bit more than double the local, rather than being near the overnight or that those extended. So I just wondered if you had an explanation about the relationship of Steamtown figures being closer to local spending rather than to more distant visitors.
Yes, I remember taking from this data from a report by the national ranking of all the national parks. And I don't know, it was 400, and Steamtown was down like 350 or something on a per visit spending. And the director at that time was quoted, and she said, "Well, we're not Yellowstone or Grand Canyon. People don't come here for extended times. This is more of a day-use experience. So people coming in, I think they'll spend a little bit more time, it looks like, than they would on the trail where you're going to have some people who just come and go. So, but the idea is we're a day-use facility. Tourist trains, I think, especially in the summer, we were talking about that, do not tend to be long, extended stay kind of experiences. And that's the difference between those first two and the last two. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Let's put a list.
Yes, thank you for your presentation. I agree with you regarding the extended stay. I think that's would result in a huge economic driver, and I can see that the trail system is an economic driver for our county, and I do see that the Catskill Mountain Railroad is a business that generates income. So they also, I guess, are an economic driver. But the thing that seems interesting to me is that if you took both of those economic drivers and combined them, I think the sum, there's a multiplier whereby the sum of that economic benefit is much larger than the sum of the two. By combining them, you will generate extended stay and probably quadruple the economics of either or. Can you agree with that?
Well, I disagree to some extent, because in Mr. Hunt's presentation, he talked about train to trail. And I'm a cyclist, and his idea is, oh, people will come to Kingston, and they'll get the train, and then they'll move into the trail, and that will increase the trail. And I think that is questionable, not fanciful, because of this. If people want to go and experience that, I don't think they're going to load their family onto a car, have their bikes, drive to Kingston, unload all of that stuff, wait for the train, ride a slow-moving train for an hour, then have the trail experience, then come back, wait for the train again, drive back, pay $12 to $15 each for doing that, when they could just drive to the trail at three user-friendly trail lanes. So I do not agree that having this, first of all, then you have to factor in the whole time, are you talking about them not having trail connectivity anymore? You're talking about just train? So that violates your policy. And I think it violates common sense. And I don't think that kind of analysis really makes a lot of common sense when you think about that magnification.
Follow up, Mr. Lux.
Well, thanks for commenting on my level of common sense. Ironically, you know, there are, if you talk to people from Metro North, there's quite a few people that bring their bike onto the Metro North train out of New York City, take it to Poughkeepsie, go up on the walkway over the Hudson or the rail trail through Dutchess or even the Hudson Valley Rail Trail, ride it all day long, have dinner, get back on the train with their bike, and go back to New York City. They've seen quite an increase in that business. But thank you very much for your comments.
Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, maybe we could ask William Sheldon to elaborate a little further on how riding to Kingston and catching a rail ride, which is a different speed of train, to go to a trailhead that is less than 5 miles away is or is not analogous to taking a transportation train from New York City at train speeds to get to a full day or an extended recreational resource. Also, I would say that common sense is perhaps not so common. So if you have any data about where something that is more analogous, in my mind, I think there's not an analogy here between these two. So I would ask if you have any data about the situation that we would be dealing with here, which is a 10-mile section to connect from a car-centered area, being Kingston, where we don't have a rail coming in with transportation rails.
I think there's a lot of speculation around this, and I'm not sure if this is the right place to speculate.
I think the question of is the analogy that was offered, relevant, accurate analogy, a good analogy to use, and do we have any data on this? Because my concern with Mr. Hunt's presentation was not whether it was commonsensical or not, but whether or not there's any data to support it. You could survey people, either ways to find out the answers to questions like this or get a little bit of a lead on it. But so far, I've only heard opinions without any data.
I think that we're getting into the opinions even with the answer to this. I guess a better question might be, is there an example of what you have outlined, which is a car-centric location like Kingston having a train line connecting to a trail? And do people use that? And without actually having an example of that, everything any of us say is speculation. And I'd rather not do the speculation.
I do have a data point that I heard from Lisa Berger, and that is that they have nature buses, and they're hardly used. So I think that's an analogy to the train to the trail. So mostly when the data is when people go to the Woodstock night, they use their cars.
Let's go first.
Yeah, I think that the while it's hard to speculate about whether people would use that connection, I think that we can very clearly agree that the people who take the train from New York City, the Metro North, and then ride from Poughkeepsie, my brother is actually one of those people. He does it frequently when he comes to visit me because he doesn't own a car. And if he owned a car, he'd probably travel differently. And if the train, if the Catskill Mountain Railroad picked people up in Grand Central Station, then yes, they would go to the, they would go on the trail, they would go as far as the train would go, but that's not where they're picking folks up. And so we're, the prospect of trail users starting their journey in Kingston brings an entirely net new group of people that are parking their cars in Kingston. Because I think most trail users are car drivers, but they don't necessarily want to drive their cars, right? So they're parking somewhere and then they want to get on their bikes and they want to bike. The thing about the multimodal transportation, which is why the Metro North example is so powerful, is because you cut out the need for a car. But with the example of putting bikes on Catskill Mountain Railroad, you don't really cut out the need for a car because, as Legislator Nolan said, we are still a car-centric community, those that live here. And people that don't own cars typically don't own cars because they can't afford to own cars, so their recreation is limited. And the best thing for them would be to bring a trail right to their doorstep. Because they're also going to be limited to pay money to put their bike on a train. They're probably not likely to pay money to put their bike on a train if they're so economically limited that in such a car-centric community they can't afford a car. So
There are people that choose not to have cars, you know, but by choice, not economically constrained, but that's not common. And for my constituents, I can tell you that's not common. And my constituents are the only constituents that really are like walking distance to the start of the train, right? So I'm speaking from my work with my constituents to tell you that I don't see them paying to put their bikes on the train to get out somewhere. They either have cars, which means they'll drive to the trailhead they want to start at, and if we get them starting in Kingston, then they'll start in Kingston, and they'll ride from Kingston. I'm very excited about the prospect of bringing net new people from outside of the community, the same way that Cascade Mountain Railroad has done such a good job of bringing people from outside of Kingston into Kingston to eat at all of the restaurants and to shop at all the shops. I'm very excited about a really strong trail hub doing the same thing, and agree that everything that Cascade Mountain Railroad has done is incredible and should continue. And the prospect of adding trail users that can, you know, can park in Kingston and immediately ride and then come back and have lunch, that's an entirely net new group of people that we're not getting today. And I frankly don't believe that we would get if the offer to them was to put their bike on the train for $15.
I would say one other thing. In that first presentation, there was no mention of railroad trail. And by implication, if you're going to put your bike on the train, you're not talking about a trail alongside it. Otherwise, people would use the trail. So I think the legislature in its past, so both regulations, says primary consideration is the connectivity by trail between Kingston and the Ashokan. And I do not see this train to trail embracing that.
Any other questions from the committee members? One more question. Legislator Nolan.
Yes, thank you very much for including the health consideration in your report and your presentation here. And my understanding of that literature is that it's very robust. You cited the $3 of health benefits for $1 invested. Stone had a very similar, you had a little bit less, and then the Stone was a little bit more. I've seen two other studies that are both around that $3 figure. And the distance to a trail that is likely to generate the increased use of 49% more likely to walk is about a quarter of a mile, is my understanding. Do you think that that the committee needs to do any further work to look at those health benefits, or do you feel that that is that you're able to summarize that? I know you're not a clinician. How do you feel about the committee relying on your health impacts, benefits, and analysis?
I certainly urge the committee to do their own research. So these are my own process is to take a look at different things that I can find that apply to those. I think you guys are wonderfully qualified and intelligent and probing on this. The questions that you're asking, I think, are very, very good questions. So if you think you have further information or you need information, Dr. Nolan, yes, bring it to the committee's attention.
Thank you.
But I think it will back this up. You know, when you start to do, you said two or three more, you know, how many do you need to stack up in order to say, yes, this is a benefit?
Any other questions from the committee members? Questions from non-committee members? Not public yet. Just non-committee members of the legislature. Okay, I think we're complete with this. Thank you so much, Professor Sheldon. Appreciate you coming on and talking with us from your vacation location.
Okay. It's my delight to, and thank you for the opportunity to have a conversation with you today. And I wish you the best of luck in your deliberations.
Thank you so much. Okay, I'd like to ask the legislature, the committee members, if they have any things they'd like to discuss under new business. Any further discussion I'd like to have? much bigger looks.
Yes. Since we're delving into all of these past things that we've done, I'd like to get a listing of the lengths and costs of all of the contracts built to date, which would be the Ashokan Rail Trail, the two that are under construction right now up at High Mount, so that when we make a cost comparison for the options in this 1.7 mile section, we can use real numbers that are Ulster County numbers, not ones from a railroad in Colorado, so that we can make some. And I'll be honest with you, you know, we spent good money back in, I believe, 14, 15, to have an expert, the Stone Group, produce a report for us. And the only thing that was left out was this section, and they did it on purpose because they knew there would be an issue and issues to tackle to come up with the highest and best use of this section. But I think if we're going through this exercise, we should probably get them back and have them do an analysis on this section for rail, railwood trail, rail plus trail, which was suggested to us today. I think it'd be well worth the effort, because this is going to cost millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars with whatever alternate we pick, to spend a few thousand or $10,000 or $20,000 to get a professional opinion, I think would be money well spent.
Thank you. We'll get those numbers for you. My question on those numbers are those numbers, are those cost numbers, converting a rail to a trail, or are those cost numbers putting a trail alongside a rail? Because those are different, in my opinion, different cost numbers. And that's an opinion, it's not a fact. You know better than I
do. No, I agree exactly with what you're saying.
Yeah.
But we're going to look at three different possible alternatives here, one of which is a trail. And those numbers are extremely applicable to a trail.
Yes, they're definitely applicable.
And if we're going to build a trail alongside of or with, still, those numbers will have some weight.
Do we have examples of that we can use? Did you say examples of that we can use Ulster County numbers? I don't know that we do. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, we have the cost of the Ashokan Rail Trail.
I mean building a trail not on top of a rail bed of that length.
I'm sure there are.
Okay.
There's O&W. There's a lot of places where we built rails.
But they're all
trails.
They're all on top of trails.
No, they're not. The section through Highland, the Hudson Valley Rail Trail, is adjacent to 299, not on the rail trail in many sections. The Ashokan Rail Trail.
You know this better than I do. I'm just making sure we have numbers.
Not a problem.
Okay. Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I'm not convinced by what you're saying, but I do have examples in Ulster County of a trail being built alongside tracks. We do have trails that were built places other than rail corridors, but in quite wide areas. So I think it will be hard to get exactly that comparison. I think that also, you know, think about all the rail trails, the Ashokan, the Hudson Valley, O&W, Walk Hill Valley, the new section up at Shandaken. Their costs depend on things like how many bridges, how many crossings. So I think just length and cost is a very rough first step, and I'm not opposed to our having it. I do have reservations about bringing in the Stone Consulting Group now that they have been hired, as it was reported to us by Mr. Hunt, by the CMRR. So I don't think that they're an independent consulting group at this point. we do have figures like what you're asking for, I believe, in the OSI report, which was done by GPI, a quite reputable engineering firm. And I don't know if they presented all of the information that they have, but I do think they have this kind of analysis. So my preference would be to ask OSI to look at what they have commissioned and either bring that in, or if they would be willing to ask GPI to bring it in for us.
So I have gotten the GPI report. I've distributed it to the legislators, I believe. I'm not sure if you've all received it yet. Okay. So the report is there. The full report's there, not just the slideshow. So it's in your packets or in your email. I'm going to add on to what Legislator Nolan said. I don't know if we've ever done a rock cut for a trail or ever done a fill for a trail. And that's my concern. So if we've done those, great, and we can get a price for that. Legislator, let's...
Okay. I will bring my expertise. When you excavate a rock cut, it could be for a road, it could be for a railroad, it could be for a canal. It's based upon the hardness of the rock, what you have to drill, what you have to blast, and where you have to move it. It's all applicable. There's no difference in cost to blast rock to make a cut for a highway, a railroad, a trail, a bike path. It's excavation. Matter of fact, the New York State Department of Transportation standard specifications call it unclassified excavation. It doesn't matter what we're excavating or where we're excavating. It's unclassified because you use it everywhere. If I'm going to dig a hole to plant a tree, or I'm going to dig a hole to, I don't know, install a pipe, I still got to dig a hole. So it's all applicable.
Same question on the fill. Is that similar also? Is there a similar structure for that cost structure that we can calculate?
Sure. It's called fill in place. It's you haul it, you put it, you compact it. Whether you're putting a road on it, a trail on it, or a bike path, or no matter what you're doing, even to build a foundation for a house, it's all compacted the same way.
And this is why it's great to have an engineer on the committee. Thank you so much.
What's that?
This is why it's great to have an engineer on the committee.
Oh.
Thank you so much.
Chair Collins?
Yeah.
I won't say anything.
So I agree with that mostly. And I believe it is the methodology that GPI used as they calculated cost. They had a standard cost for cut excavation. They had a standard cost for cut and excavation, and they had a fairly standard cost for fill, although I think they did bring in some considerations about fill in wetlands, because there would be an extended length of this trail. So I think we ought to look at the calculations that have been done by professional engineers on this. I would add, though, that I did question, and as I understand it, GPI did not look at any additional costs that might come from dealing with excavation in an area that's had creosote ties over an extended period of time. The best analogy for that would be the extra cost that came at the Ashokan Rail, the construction of the Ashokan Rail Trail, where creosote-soaked ties had to be removed and disposed of. There's considerable extra cost when that's the case, as it would be in this section of the UND. I don't think that GPI has already looked at that. I think that they could look at it, and it would be a very useful analysis. The CMRR presentation included the notion that you would use fill in place, and I don't know that we could do that in any section of this trail, but especially not near the wetlands.
Okay, yeah, that brings the wetlands up for question two. I'm not knowledgeable enough to know what the process is to be able to disturb a wetland. And to me, it sounds like it's a long process, and it probably involves a lot of studies. So that's one thing we need to investigate also. Is that correct? Okay. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Any questions or comments from the legislators not on the committee. Okay, I'll open up for public comments. I do have a hard stop at 6:30. We are doing 2 minutes at the most. Please address your comments. So there'll be no back and forth between parties in this. Please address your comments to the chair. Okay, and limit your comments to 2 minutes, please.
And state your name.
And state your name.
Susan Auchincloss. I want to make 2 points in favor of the trail. The first one has to do with saying, yes, numbers and dollars and cents are very important, but let's also consider, when I go out on the trail, I see couples walking, I see families walking, I see groups of friends walking, and I think to myself, what a magnificent alternative to sit at home alone watching your screen or Zooming with people. That's another part of life. But we have this opportunity to give people a chance to be with people, having conversations. The second point is to do, again, with health. And we've heard so much about how people are suffering from depression and low spirits and even ill health because they're so cut off from other people. And I just, again, feel that the rail trail offers an alternative to be in nature, which is tremendously healthful. Be in nature, in leisure, with or without friends. You're in nature, and it's extraordinarily healthful, no matter who you are. So the human bonding and the opportunity to have the health effects of nature are my 2 points, apart from how much money it brings into the county.
Thank you. Anyone else? Ernie.
Let me just come up first.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple points. One is to Carl Baer's question about the standard for the railroad trail presentation. That was an update of the Stone report from 10 years ago, which was made to ASHTO standards, a 10-foot wide trail, just to clarify that issue. So what we presented was ASHTO standards. The second issue I wanted to bring up is that I did have a chance to look at the Des Moines study, and there's an issue that I think is important to note. Has it been distributed to the committee yet?
Yes, I believe we did.
You did?
Yes.
There is a difference in the report between economic impact and economic activity. And the COIN report for the trail currently is $5.3 million for economic impact. The $17 million is for economic activity. It's a different number. Economic activity, as defined, is basically these are users who would still be in the county and making purchases in Ulster County even if the trail did not exist. So it's different than it is for economic impact. We only calculate economic impact. And according to Des Moines, it was $5.3 million for the trail, expanding to $7.8 million. So I just want to make sure that's clear because Mr. Sheldon's report, the word economic impact is sometimes used for economic activity numbers. So it's important to note that there is a difference between those. The other point I wanted to make is the issue of what is the increase going to be for the railroad or the trail? And the chair is correct. It's an opinion. You don't know. For the railroad, we believe that it's going to be about a 40% increase in traffic. Essentially, what we're doing is we're taking existing train users to turn them into trail people, trail users. Trail users.
Your time is up, please. Please finish.
All right. Well, anyway, I'll just say that the economic Kenway report, there is a part of the Kenway report that talks about the increase to the trail, and it's on page 15. I recommend the legislators look at that. It's equally speculative.
Thank you. Drop a hand over here.
My name is Stephen Rice, and I was a Trails Advisory Committee chair before Kevin was, and I was chair when Resolution 481 was achieved. I worked hard to get the trail community to agree to this compromise. I read everything that you could read. I discussed it. I opened the committee to the railroad. I received a heck of a nice thank you note from Mr. Hunt for helping. But Mr. Hunt also sensitized me to the quality of air pollution. And they are the dirtiest thing running up there.
I'm going to say this is not part of the committee's purview.
I'm just saying that if you're not going to consider air quality, how can you consider cohabitation?
Okay.
It can't be.
I'll let you continue.
I have health problems from breathing that kind of air. I take it seriously. If we can get a clean burning engine, you're not going to hear from me on this anymore. But we're endangering the health of every trail user on the O&W and every resident and every user of the plaza. We're increasing the cancer. We're giving them cancer tickets. And already, childhood cancer is the number one killer of kids in the U.S. 1 in 287. We're adding to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you, Chair Collin. I'm Kevin Smith. I'm chair of the Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee. I'm board chair of the Woodstock Land Conservancy. Just a couple of quick comments about the bike to the trail concept. What you lose, if you lose trail connectivity, my friend Rose, who lives in Midtown Kingston and would like to bike commute up to her job in Shokan, won't be able to do that. My friends that live in Shokan, Ray Greel, who's a store manager at Potter Brothers, he would like to bike commute to Potter Brothers. Route 28 is his only option right now. Those are two examples of many, many, many people who would use this as a transportation corridor. To the question of hiring stone consultants, the proverbial camel that got its nose under the tent in 2015, I understood the rationale, totally disagreed with it. The committee did its work. Randy Gustafson, the consultant for Stone, provided assistance, and the compromise and the policy was brokered. And a lot of good things came out of that compromise. However, I would like to read you a quote. This was after the railroad company was awarded the PFRAP grants, $4.5 million, including for a new multimodal tourist train station interconnect with the trail at Basin Road. You're overlooking several major issues here. Catskill, meaning CMRR, was the front line in dealing with rails versus trails and a hard-fought, expensive, and rather bloody battle to find middle ground that everyone could unite behind. On that much we agree, right, Hugh? Getting to Basin Road means that the very toughest spot, the original trail.
I'm sorry. This is my meeting. I was going to tell him he needs to finish up.
I know you all know.
No sounding from the audience, please. Please.
I will go back.
Your time is up. Please finish.
Getting to Basin Road means that the very toughest spot, the original fill coming up there, is in railroad hands, and the shop has been a battle for 10 years. We would like to see them actually get into the parking lot inside New York City DEP property at the trailhead. getting a clean diesel may help. As for Andy Gustafson, that's Stone Consulting. They've disqualified themselves.
Thank you, Kevin. Please no shouting from the audience. I did allow Mr. Hunt to finish his comments. I'm allowing Mr. Smith to finish his comments. Okay. In the white over here.
Good evening. My name is Larry Roth. I am a member of the UDRRC board. I also work with Solutionary Rail, New York State Empire Passengers Association, Rail Passengers Association, and the Climate Rail Alliance. So I do a lot of information working with rail issues. I'd like to make a few observations. We heard a lot about building a trail to federal standards in order to get grant money. If you haven't been watching the news, there's not going to be any federal money. So anyone expecting the trail people to be able to just have the money pouring in, you may want to reevaluate your planning. I'd also like to make another observation. We hear about numbers of trail users and numbers of rail users, but we don't hear about demographics. We are talking about two very different groups that are making use of these resources. And you're going to try to expand on one while excluding the other. If you've ever been at the rail station, you will see grandparents, families, grandkids, people with wheelchairs, people with strollers, people of all persuasions riding the train together, enjoying the outdoors, and having a good time, conversing, engaging in social activity. Not something that's as easy to do on the trail. This is what you'll be sending away. I can make an analogy. Do you like Italian food? A lot of people do. Do you want Italian food to be your only choice when you go out to eat? Do you want to patronize a restaurant that is determined to put all other restaurants out of business because they think Italian food is the only way to go? I've had some unfortunate experiences with the rail community. When they have the opening for the rail explorers, when I went to go to the opening, I was threatened with arrest just for being there because they were afraid of what I might say.
Please finish.
Same thing when they opened the Ashokan Rail Trail. The official opening time, as announced in the book, was a half hour after the ceremony, so they have a nice photo op without any objections. So I think we can do a lot better.
Just as a point, there is no discussion here about not allowing CMRR to continue its business. I'm going to go over here. We have time for one more. I'm going to take arbitrarily this gentleman here.
I think I can make the curfew. I'm Nick Mercurio. I live in Rosendale at the junction of two trails. I'll give you an anecdote that supports what's been said about those destination tourists who come here and spend their money freely. A couple months ago, I was in the parking lot of the Uptown Motel, whichever one it is, at the intersection of Washington Avenue and the O&W Trail, waiting for a 5K trail race on the trail to start. And I met a couple coming out of the motel from San Jose, California, who had come here as a part of their destination vacation from New York City to Albany via our trails. Clearly, these are the people who are spending what Professor Sheldon's study indicates they do, and I think they are they're fair game for our economic climate. Thanks.
Thank you. So, I apologize, we don't have time for anyone else to speak. Anyone who does want to have the chance to speak can go to public comment at session on February
18th.
Thank you. Also remember to vote on the minutes there. I want to do one quick thing. We had a brief few brief comments on the idea of a transportation corridor, just a transportation corridor. We as a committee have not explored that, and I believe that would be a good good thing to explore at the next session. Anything from the committee at this point?
Next meeting
will be when?
The fourth Thursday. Fourth Thursday in February would be February 27th.
So February 27th, we'll do, there's no ARFA, correct, anymore?
No.
So we can do it later in the day. 5:30?
It's up to you, then.
5:30 on that day?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Thank you, audience. Thank you, people, for coming. Thank you for listening to the presentations. I appreciate it.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes before we go.
I make that motion.
Is there a second? Motion to adjourn. All in favor of the minutes.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Motion to adjourn.
Aye.
Second. All in favor.
Aye.
Thank you.